Monday! Open wide dev fans! Get ready to stuff your face with JavaScript, CSS, Node Modules, barbecue tips, Git workflows, breakdancing, soft skills, web development, the hastiest, the craziest, the tastiest web development treats. Coming in hot, here is Wes, Barracuda, Boss, and Scott, El Toro Loco, Tolinsky.
Welcome to Syntax on this Monday, hasty treat. We're going to be doing a snack luck, a holiday snack luck. What is a snack luck? Well, that is like a potluck, but in a hasty treat. So we're going to be doing a shorter episode here that's kind of like a normal potluck, but just a little bit shorter, a little bit snacky. And this episode is sponsored by two amazing companies, Sanity and Log Rocket. But before we talk about them, let's introduce Wes Balls.
Hey, everybody. I'm bringing. Hey. I was just telling Scott how, like 10 years ago when I actually lived in Toronto, we would get together with our friends and we would have different lucks.
Did you call it a snack luck?
Yeah, we had snack luck. We had a potluck. We had culture luck, which was one of my favorites. Whoa. So, Toronto, everybody comes from a different country there, or everyone has a different heritage. So, everybody brought a dish that was from their culture. So we had, man, it was unreal. Just all the different foods that would come. So culture luck was a good one. Snack luck was good. I've always wanted to do a dip luck where you only bring foods that are a dip. But I haven't had it. I haven't had one in like a long time just because like all of my friends have like 11 kids each right now and nobody hangs out anymore. So I just sit on the couch and have my own dip luck.
Dipluck makes me think of Diplo, who's like a music producer. I hear Diplo. One time I met Diplo at a, he came into my office one time when I was working.
Oh man.
Yeah. I was working at a record label and he just showed up asking if the boss was here and I didn't know who he was because I don't know what that guy looks like. And he like came in and asked if the boss was there. I'm like, no. He's like, well, all right, tell him Diplo's here. And I was just like, oh yeah, this is famous guy. You can tell just by... It's funny, when famous people come in to wherever you're working, you can always kind of tell because they're dressed like very, very much fancier than everybody else. It's like yeah, they could be just wearing a t-shirt, but you know that t-shirt costs like $300 or something. So yeah, it was very obvious he was wealthy.
I had that with, who was it? Macklemore. Oh. I was at some like secret concert there, like someone invited me, they're like, we can't tell you what's happening but just come. So I was like, all right, I'll come. And there's just this guy walking around with this huge hair and a big coat and stuff. I was like, what, who's this guy?
Yeah, they and just look fancier, right? Yeah, you could just tell that there's somebody.
Yeah.
I don't know who this is, but it's somebody. We had that at dinner once and ended up being the quarterback for the University of Michigan. So we were like, yeah,
oh my gosh,
somebody, it's huge.
All right, let's talk about sponsors. We got Sanity and Log Rocket. I'll talk to you about Sanity. Sanity is the unified content platform that powers better digital experiences. What the heck does that mean? Well, they are part CMS, part image resizer, part developer experience. Basically, if you have a website and you need somewhere to put all of your data, that's what Sanity is. They you create it. You can create an account, you create all of your schemas, you relate all your content to each other. You can say, this is an image. You can hook it up with a bunch of different providers. You could hook it up with another one of our sponsors, Mux. Mm-hmm. And you can have your video streaming from there. They have a really sweet like UI for editing the content, which is like honestly one of the major draws because the marketing folks, the lawyers, pretty much everyone loves to use the UI for editing and approving their content. It's called Sanity Studio. It's pretty sweet. Check it out. Sanity.io/syntax. That's going to get you double the free usage tier. Thank you, Sanity, for sponsoring.
Well, while you're talking about experiences, let me tell you about Log Rocket now. That is an experience. Log Rocket is the perfect experience for your errors and exceptions because you actually get to experience them with a scrubbable video replay. As in, straight up, you can see the user click on the thing that broke the thing that caused you so much pain. And instead of them having to email you saying, hey, click thing and broke, you can say, oh, I know you click thing and broke. I saw that ahead of time with Log Rocket. So check it out at logrocket.com. /syntax. Sign up today and get 14 days for free. Thank you to LockRocket for being a sponsor.
All right, let's get on into it. We got a bunch of questions here. First one from Ashley. Has package-lock.json ever saved your bacon? It's never helped me. In fact, deleting it lets us regenerate. Has been the only way it's ever solved issues around for us. Why is everyone... This is funny because there's a lot of stuff in software development where you're like, this is a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
Like the same thing with peer dependencies. To me, peer dependencies are always getting in the way when they're really there to stop issues from happening with incompatible pieces of software. So package-lock.json will, if you ever crack it open, it will detail down to the actual version. Like the NPM packages have used SEMVer, semantic versioning, which is like 3.2.1. And then each of those point releases means that like a minor update, new features added, and then the third one is a breaking change. It's a whole new version. And the package lock will tell you to the closest point which version you use to develop that website so that when you deploy that sucker to your website and they NPM install that on your host, you're getting the same package versions. And the whole idea with SEMVer is that like if you develop with version 2.1.1, and then by the time you deploy that thing, 2.1.2 came out, those are different pieces of software. And it's supposed to be that nothing broke because it's just a small little point release, but sometimes it does release. And I've certainly had that issue with my PayPal years ago when I deployed my website for a launch. I built it. And in between me building it and me deploying it the next day, they released a version that broke something. And it made all of my PayPal transactions decline. Oh. And that was a day before package lock actually had been a thing. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's there. And the reason why I do this in my tutorials, whenever I tell you to delete your node modules, I also tell you to delete your package lock.json, is because sometimes you get like a weird version or something's not installing properly. And that's just a good way to just wipe it all out and start fresh.
Yeah. And the lock file is nothing new. I mean, and if you used Rails or any of these other package-based things, the lock file is definitely something that has been there for, and I mean, Ruby, not Rails specifically, but the lock file is definitely like a convention that exists in many other languages. So it has saved my bacon before, but I think most of the time it saves your bacon are times that you like just flat out won't notice it saving your bacon.
You don't know.
Right. Because it is. Unless the version got updated, which you wouldn't know, you wouldn't know that there was a problem with it. Sometimes that happens, yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy that we rely on moving software and just assume that it'll be fine when we're not using the lock file. That was a big thing. When the lock file came out, people were adding it to their gitignore because it just made huge diffs every time you NPM installed or updated anything. But you need that thing in your, in your version control.
Yeah. All right. Next question is from Emmanuel. And he says, why do you guys hardly say anything good about Angular? Is it obsolete? Or do you just not care? the answer really is that we just don't use Angular. Angular has a big community. A lot of people use Angular. There's a lot of very smart people working on and in Angular. So Angular is definitely not obsolete. It's not bad. I just don't use it. It's a whole thing, right? And because it's kind of a little bit more all-encompassing solution compared to some other things, you end up getting a little bit less of that outside bleed from other communities into the Angular community because they are so kind of in their own world. So that's really, really why I don't think it's a bad choice. That said, I haven't personally written anything in Angular in quite a while. Since I hit version 2, which is when I stopped paying attention to essentially what's going on in Angular, but, you know, I don't think that's a bad thing. There's a lot of really, you know, smart people. Just too much for me to pay attention to, right? I already got too much other stuff.
This is unrelated. I just went to the Angular website and I was like, what the heck? The footer still says copyright 2020. And then I went to tell Scott about it. And then I refreshed the page and it was gone. And that must have been a service worker. of it being cached from the last time I visited the Angular website, which is obviously last year or 2 years ago now, if you're listening to this next year. But then I refreshed and it was gone. So that must have been just a service worker. That's how service workers work. They serve up what's in the cache and then they check the new version. And if the new version is updated, then the next time you refresh the page, or you can also prompt the user or just literally window.refresh and it will get the new version. So yeah, it's just another thing. There's just too much good in the world that I just can't. I can't, literally can't use it all. And you wouldn't want to take a course from me if I was the guy cranking out a React, an Angular, a Vue, a Svelte, and like six other framework courses, because that means I obviously don't know the intricacies of every single framework. I could guarantee I could put out a course on all of these, but I'd much rather you take a course from somebody that's like, yeah, I actually built my course platform and I've been using React for however long. And that's not to say I won't ever use other frameworks in my courses, but I'm not going to dive into absolutely every single framework out there. It's just not enough time in the world.
Yeah, I think we're both spread thin enough as it is. So
totally. And there's people that people always ask us, like, who's the Wes Boss or Scott Tolinsky of Ruby or Angular or PHP or whatever? And they just need to, like, there's people like us in every single tech.
There's that nobody you can learn like from me, Wes.
Well, there's no one like Scott, but there's plenty of me.
No.
You're extra special.
I am very special.
Next question we have here from Kenny. Hello, gentlemen. I don't know if anyone has ever told you, but thank you, Mal, for the amazing content and the hard work you pour into the show. No one's ever told us that. Thank you, Kenny.
See, Kenny understands that I'm special. So
I listen even if the topic is irrelevant to my skill set. I'm looking at you, React. It's funny. People have said that a lot. I don't use React, but I still listen. But maybe that's good because Scott doesn't use React as much these days. So now we've got more diversified content.
Exactly.
My question is, how do you handle package updates? For example, I'm working on a full stack app for almost a year now, and I go to my package dependencies and it usually breaks everything when I update it. I usually use npm outdated to see a list of outdated packages. Problem is, I never know whether to use npm install or npm update after updating the version of the package. JSON, the worst is blah, 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 blah. Okay, I feel this pain myself. I get the gist of the question.
Yes.
I specifically use a third-party package called npm check updates. It's NCU. NPM's version of npm update or whatever, or npm outdated, I've just never jived with it. Maybe I just don't understand, or maybe I've been using NCU for so long.
NCU is better.
Yeah. NCU will show you what versions of your packages are available to update. And then you can update the ones that you want. There's another one. I posted NCU and someone's like, this one's even better because you can pass it a regex of which ones to update.
I would not do that. I always YOLO it.
For example, but like, what if you wanted to update all of your Gatsby plugins? Gatsby dash all of them.
Then I would run NCU and then I would only select the Gatsby ones. That's not too good for me. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, whatever. I use NCU as well. And what I usually do is I just look at it and then I'll look for the ones that are a full version bump first. And usually that means there is a major breaking change. And then what I'll do is I'll go to the release notes for it and check. Actually, what I'll really do is just update everything and pray that it works. And sometimes that'll work. Or update everything, run your test, and then start Googling errors from there on out. But if it's something major, like a major bump in like Mongoose or a major bump in Gatsby, I'll go to the change log for that and just see like, all right, what changed here? And I'll scan through it. And usually you say, don't care, don't care, don't care, don't care. Because like all of these like edge case things that you've never used before is not getting into. Or it's like they'll even have a, what's it called? A code mod. Where a code mod is something you just run and it's a fancy find and replace on your entire code base.
Code mods scare me. I wrote one and it was very scary.
Yeah, because you need to think about, I was writing not a code mod, but just like a find and replace for my advanced React course. And the find and replace was replacing the instructions in my find and replace instructions. You know what I mean? Like,
I know what I was you like, mean. Oh. Yeah. I recently was doing like a lot of regex find and replace. And I was like, please stop replacing this thing. And then I was on the regex 101s and all sorts of stuff. Yeah.
So that's how I do it.
But yeah. Code mods, anything, any major change like that. Scary, scary, scary. But yeah, I do it very similar. I use a PNPM tool that is very similar to all of these. It gives you an interactive select which ones you want. Actually, I think the PNPM one is built in. PNPM update. It's PNPM up hyphen I. So that's the one. And then you can do hyphen capital L for latest. Yarn also has a really good built-in one. So Yarn and PNPM have really good built-in ones. But if I'm using NPM, I'm using NCU. And all of those things, they work really well. Like I said, I don't need the regex because you can just select which ones you want to update and which ones you don't. But what I'll do, similar to US, is I will select all of the patch updates first. And I will run all of the patch updates. Then I'll confirm that everything's working. And then I'll commit because the patch updates have been updated. And then I'll do the big daddy updates one at a time. Like if something did a major version update, I will only do those one at a time, make sure all that stuff works. But I like to stay on top of it. People have really asked about like, how do you stay on top of your updates? And it's really
three times
just
a day.
That,
yeah.
I really try to run NCU or whatever my thing at least once every other week, not because I'm obsessed with getting the latest and greatest. And there are some downsides to that as well. You're going to hit more bugs that way. But I personally like to do that just so I don't have a situation where I'm too far behind on it.
Yeah, it doesn't
I'm
get away from you.
Running them. Yeah.
Yeah, especially like I have like a version of like Next.js 8 running on one of my things. And I'm just like, I don't want to, it's too far upgraded now.
Yeah.
Like I got to spend like a day upgrading this thing now instead of like incrementally doing it.
Yep.
And then it's impossible to like search and Next.js 8. Like how do you do this in Next.js 8, you know?
All that stuff is a big time suck too. You know, I mean,
yeah, it's frustrating.
Updated my site from Sapper to SvelteKit and I never even published the Sapper version or the SvelteKit version. And now that's on my old laptop and I haven't, committed that yet. So I'm going to have to do it a second time, I think.
I just found the tweet about NCU. I tweeted it in 2015. So it was almost 7 years ago I've been using this thing. And the tips that people said was use the --- filter on NCU. And that will allow you to filter for Apollo, GraphQL, whatever. And then somebody else said NPM upgrade is another package that has interactive mode. Which helps open change logs. So like you go one by one and it will try to pull in the change log for you. I'm going to try that next time.
Hmm. Next question is from Connor. How do you keep learning as a beginner as you progress in your career? I love the rapid progress I saw as a beginner and I feel like I've plateaued since working full time for a few years. So he got those beginner gains. He got those beginner gains and then now is wondering, well, where are those, the rest of those beginner gains? And sometimes you got to work for those. But I bet, Connor, I bet if you were to look at code that you've written 2 years ago, that you would probably scoff at that code. Because when you work full time on stuff, you end up picking up different skills. You end up picking up these project management skills, these team skills, these code skills about building solid software that works, that ships, all those things. I would imagine that you are making some serious gains still that just are different than the ones you were doing before, which were like, oh, now I can do this interactive thing that opens up a modal and whatever, right? These new skills, I would imagine, have just taken a different shape. So I would say you're probably still rapidly progressing. And most of us, if you're working in code every day, it's honestly hard not to get better. Not that you're going to be learning new things, but you'll be doing things more efficiently. You're going to have a better understanding of things, especially if you're working as a full-time dev. Now, if you want to feel like you've not plateaued in some sort of way and you want to say like, all right, let's feel excited about something, I would suggest taking something that seems kind of wild to you and going for it. Like, for instance, there's a new 3D library that just came out for Svelte that Vercheris did. So a Svelte, I think it's Svelte Cubed or something. And now I don't work a ton in 3D. I've taken a few 3D courses, but I did do a 3D course on React. And let me tell you, that was like one of the most eye-opening experiences for me when I did that 3D course on React, because it was like, oh, you can do all this wild stuff. with 3D and React, and it's really easily. And so maybe if for you, whether that is, you know, something like this Svelte Cubed project or React 3 Fiber, or these are just, you know, totally off the wall suggestions, but pick something that's kind of interesting and fun and just go for it in a little side project. And it doesn't have to be anything you're even going to share or publish. Just make the repo and goof around. Sometimes goofing around can make you feel goofing like you're really picking up some stuff.
I was just going to say the exact same thing, is like optimize for having fun, like do something that is interesting. And it, sometimes it's hard for people to find that because they're kind of burnt out on it. And the last thing they want to do is like code more when they're, they're done their day job. But you often hear people like, oh, I picked up X, Y, or Z and it's reinvigorated my passion for programming. And honestly, for me, that's always when I do something fun. And find something that is fun to you, whether it's like, we had so much response to that, the last podcast we did on like automation with JavaScript, because that's just like, not necessarily that everybody liked that, but it obviously hit a nerve with the type of person that wants to automate their life with JavaScript.
Totally.
So find something fun. Next question we have here from Joe from MN. That's Minnesota there, Scott.
Yeah, that is from Minnesota. MN.
Joe from Minnesota.
Land of a thousand lakes.
My wife and I recently took our three children on their first flight. The older kids did great with the built-in screens and movie selections. Got me thinking, how does this work? Sort of some media server on the plane with all the content. How do you two go about implementing this? I recall from the NAS episode that you talk about implementing your own Google Photos or Netflix. Thanks and keep up the great work. This is kind of an interesting question because this is exactly how my brain works, is I sit in a taxi or a plane and I go, how are they doing this and how can I break this? So I'm assuming, I don't even know, but I that has never stopped me from answering a question in the past. I'm assuming you're right. They have some sort of NAS on the plane that has a huge hard drive full of tons and tons of content. And there's probably some person that just takes this new hard drive and slots it in with all the new content as well as the metadata. So? Yeah. It's definitely not streaming. The airplane Wi-Fi would not be able to support streaming 60 movies beamed up from the ground when they can hardly load a text page.
They offer internet that you can subscribe to, and then...
Have you ever done a speed test on that internet?
I've never paid the money for the internet, so...
Oh, yeah. I always buy it when I'm on, and it's brutally slow. Oh, whoa. Yeah.
I always... What I do is I get the kids' tablets loaded up, and then I click download on 1,000 things on Netflix, and let the kids sit on the tablets. But although my own personal coding stuff probably just ends up doesn't, I never use Wi-Fi, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't pay it for my kids. Like, it's the internet on the plane is not for streaming stuff. No, it's just for like doing email and whatever. I haven't been on a plane in forever, though.
I was just on a plane. Don't go.
Don't go. I think that's kind of interesting. And I actually just talked about this the other day. Scott and I both have Synology disk stations, and I'll let you talk about yours after. I run a NAS server called EMBY, and that holds all of our local video. So we have Disney Plus and Netflix, and
me too.
We had the streaming TV at some point, and it recorded streaming TV. Which is really cool. So you could like say, record every instance of this one. And we've mostly switched over to just using like Disney Plus and Netflix. Like, we have enough of those that it covers it. But like, one example is Bluey. Our kids' favorite show in the world is Bluey. And
the best show is Bluey. What's your kids' favorite characters? Is it Bluey?
Oh, I don't know. I should ask them. I just know that my kids go bananas for it.
My kids, and it's very cute, where Landon likes Bluey more and Brooklyn likes Bingo more, because they're same age in the kids. Yeah, it's very cute.
Oh, if you are just like an adult with no kids, go watch Bluey. It's excellent.
There's an episode where the flat pack is the episode, and I think it will bring me to tears every single time I watch it, because the entire thing there like culminates into like the was that Michelangelo painting on the Sistine Chapel? Like, it culminates to that where, like, they rapidly, not only rapidly evolve from fish to human beings, and eventually, and by the end of it, their parents have gotten old, and the child has grown up, and it's like, it's all being done through metaphor of children playing in the front yard. But meanwhile, I'm over here just being like, oh, it's so sad. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. So talking about Bluey, Bluey season 3 is only available in Australia. So I did what any good hacker will do, and I flipped on the VPN and made it look like I was in Australia. And then I used some YouTube DL to download it from whatever Australian version of that is. And then I threw them on our NAS. And it's awesome because the kids have the MB app on the iPads and they could stream it from there. We have it on our TV. I was at my parents' yesterday, and because MB lets you stream over the internet, I streamed it from our disk station to thing, and you can download the episodes on the iPad, and it's awesome. So that's my NAS setup. Go and listen to the NAS episode, home server episode. What's your NAS setup for? Do you have any like local media files, or is everything just streaming for you?
I have MB, and I have like maybe like 300 Shaw Brothers films on MB. But I'm the only one who uses MB. We have it set up through our TV so I can watch any of my Shaw Brothers films at any moment on the TV or any device. But I swear, like I've probably talked about MB to the fam a couple of times, and just it hasn't caught on. We don't have a ton of kids movies on there. That's probably why we just basically have only violent kung fu movies on there. So I would imagine that's probably why I'm the only person using it. I'm just hitting this realization that anybody else would fire it up and be like, oh, okay.
There's nothing good on here. Yeah.
The Devil's Mirror. Okay.
It's amazing. Like I look at the stuff that we have on MB, and it's all just because of, you can't get it in Canada. And like, it's been getting much better. Like my ideal is that like less and less, because obviously you have to pull these episodes from somewhere. I pulled a lot of Arthur off of YouTube as well, because Arthur is the best show ever.
Oh yeah, Arthur's the best.
And it's great because you can just have it offline or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. That I got to get more into this too, because I was thinking about it the other day. I really wanted to watch the Canadian Bake Off, because we finished all the British Bake Offs. And it's like, well, there's four seasons of the Canadian Bake Off. But you know what? Netflix is tricky. I've actually gotten it to work with my VPN to get the Canadian Bake Off, and I can watch it on my phone. But then if I try to Chromecast it, or if I try to do it on the TV,
Like, that doesn't work.
Why aren't you using the app? I'm like, I know why I'm not using the app. Yeah, I'm not using the app because I can't VPN past it.
Yeah, the Chromecast goes directly to the server.
Yep.
Which is always frustrating for us, because when we at our cottage, we had American internet and we could never watch any of the Canadian shows on the Chromecast, mm-hmm. because you would have to do like a VPN at the router level, and I just haven't had that set up, you know?
Yeah. And also, like, what's up with apps trying to block you on that stuff? Like YouTube TV, I'm trying to watch the Detroit Lions, you know? Okay. It's a mystery why anyone would want to watch the Detroit Lions, but if I VPN to Detroit, just let me watch the Lions. Say okay, we know they're going to lose anyways, so just here, you got it.
That's what makes people go to piracy, because when it is too hard to actually do the right thing, you know?
Right, totally. Yeah.
I feel like it's gotten much better in the past years. Like, I don't mind paying for a couple of these services. Just like, don't make me have to jump through hoops and like use VPNs and all that stuff.
Yeah. Case in point is, I think the NHL just signed a big deal with ESPN, and they're now on ESPN Plus rather than their own one. And that's like a prime example of, like, instead of rolling your own crappy app, which the NHL did for so long, it's like, use somebody who has like a good app.
Who knows what they're doing.
And it's way better. Yeah.
Sweet. I think that's good for this episode. Should we wrap it up?
Yeah, let's wrap it up. I'm going to now spend some serious time on my MB server. You got me on MB zone.
Awesome. Well, let me know if you need the Bluey plug. I'll show you how to do it.
Need it.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. Happy New Year, and we'll see you next year.
Peace.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.